Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, September 15, 2024. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater, and your moderator for this morning. The share ID numbers for Friday, September 13th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,742, that's 21742. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,743, that's 21743. This morning, A Vision for You presents Holding Your Hand Through the 10th Step. Step 10 states, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. The purpose of steps 1 through 9 is a personal transformation leading to a spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive overeating. With step 10, the Big Book tells us sanity has returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor, in our case, in that food, our alcoholic foods. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. The process of looking at our character defects and our wrongs that we began in the fourth step continues with this step, step 10. It is a lifetime occupation of evaluation and correction. The Big Book states that we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This step tells us how to maintain and grow the new state of serenity and freedom we have achieved. Working step 10 means adopting a way of life that requires continuous commitment and effort. The difficulties and the rewards of the step come from applying it to our lives day after day, month after month, year after year. It is an essential part of the program of recovery and what the Big Book calls its design for living. The design for living that keeps the promises coming true in our lives. This morning we have two speakers joining us to speak about and elaborate on step 10. Nancy J. from Tennessee, formerly from Illinois. Nancy is a recovered compulsive overeater, a loyal servant of Overeaters Anonymous, and a beloved member of A Vision for You. And we have Bonnie P., a devoted member of Overeaters Anonymous, chair of the Scottsdale Big Book Study OA group, and very involved in the program of recovery and carrying the message of recovery near and far. And it's with great appreciation that I welcome these speakers, and let's get started now with Nancy J. Good morning, Nancy.
Hi, guys. Actually, I'm going to start, if that's okay.
Well, welcome, Bonnie P.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm honored to be the opening act for the famed Nancy J. Excuse me. My name is Bonnie P., born again, compulsive overeater. And I say that because on page 63 of the Big Book, it says, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could live life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and thereafter. I am Bonnie P. First, I'll share some background on food behavior. talk about my path to recovery and how the 10 step keeps me on the straight and narrow. Everything I say today is my story only. My family survived the Holocaust, and I'm the first generation here in this country. My brother and my sister as well. So my dad came over, he had a very low opinion of overweight Americans that he called fat. My mom was a compulsive overeater. My dad was on her all the time to lose weight, and she never could. So the message early on was, if you're fat, you're a failure. You could be educated, have a great job, but none of that mattered. My dad never allowed much food in the house, but my mom would buy a lot of junk, and we had our special hiding places. So I hid my entire life, and I became very good at it. I could make things disappear in a split second, including spitting out my food and shoving it in my pockets. So no one ever knew how sick I really was. My sister and I worked in an ice cream store when we were younger, and we would go in at night with the key, and we would pack up all kinds of stuff and have food parties. She lived, we had a three-family house, so her room was on the top floor. So we would go up and listen for my dad on the bottom in fear that he would say, Bonnie, Gail, and we would throw everything away, spit out the food. And one time specifically, I remember he started to come up the stairs, so we threw the ice cream and all the stuff that we used with it, put the quilt over it, and she had to sleep with that quilt. My mom's diabetes was really hard to control. She was on a combination of pills and shots. And one scene I remember was I opened her closet and all this stuff fell out, all kinds of junk. And as a kid, I got really upset and started to scream. And my dad came in and I didn't understand. She didn't love us enough to stop, and I blamed her for her disease. So when I was in high school, she fell, and I was there with her, and her ankle was hanging off of her foot, and she went to the hospital, and her leg was amputated. So when she came home, my dad locked the kitchen door, so she would walk down the front steps with the prosthetic from back then, walk around and come up the other side, the back side, and then unlock the door. So she was 25 when she died from the disease, and my brother also died from complications of the disease. I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. My first memories in life have to do with food. My first life memory was, it was at a Jewish holiday and they served borscht soup. I took a spoonful of that soup, which is basically beets and sugar and water. And my entire body, I felt as though I had stuck my finger in an electrical socket. I just felt it from head to toe. And from that point on, it was always about my next bite. It was never about the one I was eating. I was always looking at other people's food and always wanting more. Food-related thoughts controlled my life, and I became a victim to my disease at that early age. Sometimes I wanted to hit my head against the wall to get those food thoughts out of my head. And I would take my hand and hit my head with my hand to try to get those thoughts out of my head. So I hated myself at a very early, very young age for not being able to control my behavior. I remember watching my dog eat, and I thought, I eat like that. So in high school, I found a doctor. We would call them quack doctors. And they prescribed amphetamines to people, to women, basically girls, who wanted to lose weight. So that's when I started my, what I call lifelong 3 and 3. I would have 3 days where I couldn't eat at all, and then 3 days where I just binged and ate so much that I got so sick and I needed to spend the next 3 days to recover. So I pulled all kinds of stunts to lose my 70 pounds and my craziest diet of all, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with, is my bulimia diet. So many times I had vomit in my hair and my clothes, and eventually my fingers didn't work. So I used objects to be able to throw up. Medical repercussions from that is, one, having direct trauma to my vocal cords, which I carry with me every single day. When people like you guys are probably thinking, I can't hear you, or our connection must be bad because you keep going in and out. I also have a hiatal hernia that I, from the pressure of self-induced vomiting, that I still experience daily. Indigestion, even with medication. And I also went through phases where I abused diuretics as well as laxatives. I tried everything to control my weight, and I was filled with lies around my addiction. But the lies I told to myself were the worst, because I would say, this time, this minute, this day, this second, I really mean it to the core, that I would be able to use self-control. So sometimes life events bring us to program. And in November 2020, my son was in college at Johns Hopkins, and he called from the emergency room. And he said, Mom, they found something on my brain. I got to go. They're doing tests. So my husband and I hung up and drove immediately to Baltimore, to Johns Hopkins, and we met with the doctors. And my son, who was 26 in 2020, has a brain tumor. He had brain surgery. A week later, I dropped him at the door because it was COVID. We could not get in, and I waved goodbye. And I watched him walk to the elevator. So needless to say, my disease was in full swing, and I knew I needed to be present to learn everything I could about his type of brain tumor and to be able to talk to a team of doctors and ask the right questions and understand the answers. And I had no room in my head for his disease in mine, and his wasn't going anywhere, so mine had to. To be honest, if it was me, I probably would have continued to eat, but it was my son. And so I had absolutely, positively no choice. I would have thrown myself in front of a bus if it would have got rid of his brain cancer. So that was my moment of truth. I knew I needed spirituality. I also knew that there was never going to be a tomorrow where I would wake up and really mean that this was the day, that this is the day today. I had lied to myself for 60 years, and I had come to the point where I couldn't even believe my own lies anymore. I would just say, you're a liar. You're a friggin' liar. There's no way you mean what you're saying. But it took me 60 years to say that. So I had been in and out of OA my entire life since my 20s. I had never been absent, and there were local groups here in Boston. So it was more like people would come to vent. But I bought the big book and I never opened it. But I knew even back then that someday when I was ready, that would be the answer. So on that ride back from Baltimore, I thought, okay, I have this big book. It's somewhere in my attic. I'm going to look for it. I went up to my attic and that big book was there on top of the stairs. Now, I would love to say that I had thought about it before, and I pulled out the book, but I had only thought about it in Baltimore. So I still to this day have no idea how that book was there on the top of my stairs. And there was this moment of silence where I was looking around and I realized now that my higher power was saying to me, here is my Bible, but I have no religious affiliation. I will be anything you want me to be. Read each page carefully and I will guide you step by step to a new life. You will be born again. One stipulation. When you recover, you must carry this message to another, or I'll take it all back. So I grabbed the book, signed on the dotted line, and I was all in from the start. Thinking back, I know this was a spiritual experience. So I opened the book, and I was mesmerized from the start, and I still am. I was mesmerized taking it all in, but I knew I needed it fast. I knew that if I had done it slow, it would be dying with group support, and that was never enough for me, so that was not going to work. The first three steps were somewhat difficult, connecting God of my religion with food, but I continued anyway thinking, you know what, I have nothing to lose. Through the process of taking my moral inventory, I was able to find the spirituality I came looking for 3 years ago. I found that when I put my garbage aside, there was something inside of me, this warmth and serenity that I had never felt before. And the big book refers to it as the sunlight of the spirit on page 66. So when I stay connected to that sunlight, I have the new life that was promised to me on top of those attic stairs that day. And it doesn't include beating myself up with food. Early on, I heard someone suggest to take the judgment out of the process, that the character defects are just attributes and nothing more that stands in the way of recovery, and that was a game changer. So if that person, that guy, is here today, I would like to thank him because it has helped numerous people that I've spoken with and sponsored to get through the fourth step without killing themselves. But I'll say that in a dramatic way. That brings me to step 10 because all of this background in the inventory brings me to step 10, which is my maintenance step. It brings me back to that sunlight of the spirit. I no longer have to use food to alter what I'm feeling, because the 10th step gives me a technique to identify those feelings, process them in a healthy way, and let them go. It's my moral compass. It holds me accountable every day for my behaviors. But I can't believe that my higher power is going to magically remove these resentments. There are a couple of things I need to do first. So I need to stay laser focused so I know exactly what I'm giving away. And I have to sincerely and honestly see where I'm selfish, dishonest, and fearful, and not just go through the motions. So when I get 10-step calls, not here, but on the other end, then I know in my heart from my experience, it's not going to work. So the big book tells me on page 64, we are prepared to look at our resentments from an entirely different angle. That opens up a whole new world for someone like me who only saw one angle, mine. So in keeping with that, I then ask God to open my mind and my heart to see the truth. And I briefly discussed that with my sponsor. By saying that out loud, that lets me see the different angle. Then I say my prayer, and I get an immediate sense of calm. It works like a charm every single time. I think there's probably only one or two in my 3 years that I've had reoccur, and that's only because I meet with the same person and it happens again. So then I say my my prayer to my prayer of choice to relieve me of the bondage of myself so that I can better be of service to everyone who comes in contact with me today, and to remove my character defects. And that's it. That comes to the 15 minutes exactly. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. Thank you very, very much. Leah, can I be heard? Hello?
Yes, Nancy. Go ahead. We hear you loud and clear.
Hello? Hello?
Nancy?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
go ahead.
Okay,
we
good.
Hear you loud
thank
and
you.
Clear. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bonnie, thank you so much for your remarkable recovery story. It amazes me every time I hear it. Now, I'm going to say a little bit about my recovery and my experience in OA, and then a little bit about step 10, and then Bonnie and I are going to demonstrate how to do a 10th step. So that's the plan for this part of the presentation. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. I'm 79 years old today, and I was born into a very lovely traditional Jewish family. I had very loving parents, and then I had an older brother. And I remembered feeling very lucky to be in this family, very happy to be in this family, even as a very young child. And we moved out to Freeport on Long Island, for those of you who know Long Island, and we're right on the Atlantic Ocean in Freeport. My father loved boating, and we were really in a lovely home in a very nice town. And my father was a lawyer, and he would take the Long Island Railroad into New York every day to work. But the reason he picked Freeport, I'm sure, is because it was on the Atlantic Ocean, and he could do his boating on the weekend. And so that was our life up until I was about 7 years old. And when I was seven, my mother started to wear a neck brace to support her head. And I was told it was a back condition, that she had a bad back. And then when I was nine, my father came and took me to my aunt's house for the weekend. And when I came home from my aunt's house, everybody was crying in our house. It turns out they had just returned from my mother's funeral, and she died of cancer. I didn't know she was dying, but by the time I was brought home that day, she already had been buried. So it came as a total shock to me, and I'm sure my parents thought that was the kind thing to do to a nine-year-old child. But it was a tremendous shock. And after my mother died, my father was single for a year or two, and then he met a lady and married her. And that turned out to be further trauma, because that lady was very jealous of me and mean to me. So I had to live with that. She eventually died of cancer my senior year of high school. Who's ever making the noise, please hit *1 to mute yourself. So anyway, I had this mean stepmother. She died of cancer when I was after the summer after my senior year of high school. And so this, of course, is all trauma. But as far as my addiction to food, it didn't start yet. I remember I was the little girl, and I was on the thinner side. I was a normal size girl and teenager, but I always, at a birthday party, I'd say, "Are you going to eat that rose? I love the rose, the icing." And so I still didn't have a weight problem until I got to be about 20 years old. And then once I started to have children, it really took off. And the next thing I knew, I was over 100 pounds overweight. I don't know why that switch flipped when I was about 20, but boy, did it flip. And once it flipped, I was a compulsive overeater of the high volume type. I couldn't get enough in me. I just love to eat. I love the feeling of being stuffed. The more I felt stuffed, the happier I was. And I'm sure it had something to do with all the trauma of my childhood, but I really am not sure why it happened when I was 20, 21. But I've been told by people, and I agree with them, it really doesn't matter why. We look for reasons, but the reality is you're a compulsive overeater and you're looking for a solution. And the solution that I found was in this beautiful, beautiful program. I was in OA briefly in my young 30s. Then I went to law school and I came back in earnest after many, many years when I was almost 70 years old. And in that interim period, I tried all the different weight loss things that I think most of us try. I was up to 272 pounds, and I was almost 70 years old and had many, many severe medical issues at that point. I should say that I'm married to a wonderful man. That was a real blessing in my life. And we've been together, it's 55 years. And we have three adult children, and we have seven grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. And that's the reason I moved to Mississippi. My husband and I moved, I'm not Mississippi, I've got myself too far south. We moved to Tennessee and just 2 months ago. And one of our granddaughters and her family, including our three great-grandchildren, live 10 minutes away here in Tennessee. We're in Piperton, Tennessee. I wrote something about how it feels to be recovered because now I'm 79 years old. In April of 2025, I will have been maintaining a weight loss of over 100 pounds. And it's a miracle. I just can't believe that not only could I lose the weight, but I've lost over 100 pounds a few times. What's the miracle for me is the way I feel inside and the fact that I wear one size clothes, and I've been doing that for many years now, and that I'm going from day to day in this beautiful way of life. I wrote something called Cross the Bridge, and I want to read it to you. To me, this represents how I feel about being recovered. Okay, here we go. Yes, cross the bridge. Do not be afraid. Many others have safely crossed before you. The bridge is very strong and only 12 steps long. Go quickly across the bridge. Don't look down. Don't slow down. Just go forward. A trusted guide will go before you. Cross the bridge step by step. Look ahead. As you go across the bridge, your legs feel stronger and steadier. You feel a new power. As you step off the bridge onto land, you look around with amazement. You are in a new world of spiritual purpose, freedom from food obsession, service to others. It is a design for living that works in rough going. So that's the way I feel about recovery. And I'm just checking my time here. I want to tell you in the next 5 minutes a little bit about step 10. When I learned about step 10, I was told, look at page 84. So those of you who have your big book in front of you, turn to page 84. And if you haven't looked at it before, you'll be surprised. Step 10 is just really almost half of one paragraph. It's the middle paragraph on the page, on page 84 in the fourth edition. And it's remarkable how clear the instructions are. And, you know, we have all different ways of doing step 10 in our fellowship. And what people sometimes really don't know is if they're doing many things to do a step 10, that's, if it helps you, of course, that's fine. And I should say for both Bonnie and me that we're just giving our opinions today from our experience. We don't represent OA or speak for OA. So what I'm going to tell you about my vision of step 10, it's my opinion, my experience, and from what I've heard from others who I respect so deeply and who have had very strong recoveries. You can keep step 10 very, very simple. And indeed, the big book keeps it amazingly simple. Let's look at what it says here on page 84. It says, we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So we're there. It's pretty much most people seem to feel they're talking about making amends and so on. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. Again, that steps, it could be certainly steps 8 and 9 would be a logical conclusion. We've entered the world of the spirit. And then it goes on to say, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So what we're talking about now is something we will do till the day we die. It's going to continue for our lifetime. Continue, and here is the directions for step 10, and look at how few there are. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Four things. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. And you notice it doesn't say if they crop up, it's when. We're all expected to have this on a daily basis. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely, and that's an interesting word, they're telling us resolutely, in a very determined way. Therefore, then when we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, love and tolerance of others is our code. Look at how few directions there are in there. We can keep step 10 very, very simple and very quick. And what I want to say in my last minute or two here before Bonnie and I did talk about step 10 a little more and demonstrate it for you is there are four things you're going to look for. You're looking for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And I found for myself and for the people I sponsor, we can't remember those four things. We can't remember. If you ask the average person in OA, what four things are you looking for on a step 10? A lot of them will have to say, wait a minute, I have to look at the book or I have to look at my notes. Well, we have to know this because if we don't know what we're looking for, how are we going to find it? It makes me think of a hunter who's out in the woods. He's going to hunt, and he doesn't even know what he's hunting for. It's a thankless task. You've got to know what you're looking for. So how do you remember selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear? Well, I took the first letter of each one. So S, D, R, and F, and I came up, I thought of a lot of different things. Nothing seemed to match. Finally, I thought SD, that's sod, and RF is roof. I had been to Ireland once, and I loved it, and there were homes with a sod roof. And so that's my memory trick, and I teach it to all my sponsees. when you're thinking about doing a 10th step, you're upset about something, well, you're going to cover SD.
Nancy, I believe we lost you. Star 1 to unmute.
Oh, Leah, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, good.
Please continue.
Did you hear me talk about the sod roof?
Correct.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Wonderful. I wonder what happened. Okay, Bonnie, are you there? Bonnie and Leah, you can hear me. Leah?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can, Nancy.
You can hear me, but we don't have Bonnie?
That seems to be correct, yes.
We don't have
Bonnie. For Bonnie.
Okay.
Bonnie, star 1 to unmute.
Oh, cool. Okay, you can hear me.
Bonnie,
yes,
are you there?
Yes.
Good. We're all together. Wonderful. Now, Bonnie, the sod roof that I was mentioning, that's how I remember those four things. Do you have any little tricks, Bonnie, that you use to remember those four things?
No, but I have a 10th step to give you, Nancy.
Oh, you want to give me a 10? This is wonderful, Bonnie.
Is that okay?
Pardon me?
Okay.
Bonnie?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, now I can. Bonnie, do you have a 10th step you would like to give me?
I do, as a matter of fact. Nancy, it's Bonnie.
Yes.
I have a 10th
yes.
step. Can I give you a 10th step?
Yes, I'm ready to try to help. Yes.
Nancy, my husband won't help me with these house projects. He's so selfish. I want to paint all my 80s oak white, and I have this whole list of projects to do. Everyone knows me at Home Depot, and they know me by name. And they're like, Bonnie, what are you here for today? And I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, what a schmuck this nice lady is married to. And they know me at Lowe's, too. Do you think I should go to Ace Hardware? Maybe they don't know me there. But I have all these other projects to do, and I don't know where to start, and I don't understand why he's not helping me pick out the paint. And Nancy, you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm listening. Bonnie, you're saying that your husband won't help you with a project around the house?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to hear the whole story, though? I have so much more to say.
Yeah, Bonnie, I'll tell you, Bonnie, I think it would be more helpful to you. You'd get more relief from these emotions if we followed the directions on page 84. They're just very simple directions. So would you go along with me, Bonnie, and we'll try to do it the way it's laid out on page 84. Are you up for that?
Oh, okay, so I should send the babysitter home then?
Oh, no.
I guess this is going to be quick, you're telling me.
You thought it was going to be a long time.
Oh,
no, this
I
can
didn't
be,
know. Okay.
Bonnie, this is going to be a very short process if we do it the way it's laid out on page 84. It actually can be less than 5 minutes, Bonnie. It could be less than 3 minutes.
Wow. Okay, cool.
So now, Bonnie, the concept of a headline, let me explain that first. You know, in the newspaper, there could be a big article in the newspaper, but then at the top of the article, there's like a title, like if it says man is murdered, let's be a sad one, man is murdered And then they have a big article about how the way the man is murdered. But the headline is just a few words at the top. What we're going to do for each of these four areas, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, we're going to go over each one talking about how your husband won't help you with this home project. And Bonnie, it's going to be difficult at first, but I want you to boil down in just a headline and a few words about each one. So let's start with the selfishness. Now, your husband's name is Lee, isn't that right?
Correct. Okay, so I guess my resentment is he won't help me with
home. No, let's start with selfishness. We'll do it in the order that page 84 gives
you. Oh, okay.
Bonnie, selfishness. Can you make a headline up about how you feel Lee is selfish?
Oh, okay, but you mean how I'm selfish?
Yes, I'm sorry. I should have said how you, Bonnie, how you are selfish.
Lee was selfish. Okay,
yes, you're right. So, if we were doing Lee's, an inventory about him, but we're talking about you. So tell me, Bonnie, how you are selfish in this situation with Lee.
Okay. Well, listen, I have the whole script played out. I have all my house projects done. And fine, he's not following my script.
So you're mad at him because he's not following your script about the home. Okay.
Exactly.
That's now, Bonnie, let's go on to dishonesty. Where is your dishonesty in this situation?
Okay. Well, the story I'm telling myself usually comes in the form of name calling. Let's see. He's lazy. He doesn't care about the house. He would be happy living in a shack. All the people at Home Depot are going to say, what kind of a schmuck is she married to?
Yes.
Yeah,
and Bonnie, now, I'm so glad you started to look for what things you were telling yourself.
Yeah.
I've heard that called catastrophizing. We say all the things that are rolling around in our head that may or may not be true, bad things that are going to happen. Like you say, people at Home Depot are going to make fun of you and think that you have a bad husband or he doesn't love you.
They're going to condemn you. Yeah, okay, I get it.
And some people are confused by dishonesty because they think it means lying or stealing. And they say, I'm not dishonest, but they don't realize it can refer to these things, these stories we're telling ourselves that may or may not be true about ourselves or others. So, okay, the dishonesty I think we've done. Now we go on to resentment. Can you talk about the resentment that you have in this situation?
That he's not helping me. That he has to stop watching sports and come upstairs and help me.
Okay, that's good. And now, Bonnie, fear. How does fear come into this?
Well, if he loved me, he would help me. So I guess it's rejection.
A fear of rejection, a fear that he doesn't love you.
If he loved me enough, he would,
Now, Bonnie, you could have made this situation a very, very long story and done a lot of venting. And you know, venting has some value, I guess, but not in the context of a 10th step, because what we're going to do is asking our higher power to remove these. And the next sentence says, when these crop up, these four things, we ask God at once to remove them. So, Bonnie, I'm going to ask you either out loud or to yourself to ask God to remove at once to remove these four things, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So do you want to do it out loud or to yourself?
Well, Nancy, I'd like to go to page 64 first for a quick second. I promise it's quick. But where it says, be prepared to look at our resentments from another angle. So I'm going to ask God to open my heart and my mind to see the truth. The truth is, he's not lazy. He does plenty here in the house. The truth is, you know what? These are my projects. They're not his. And from now on, I'm going to do them with love in my heart. I'm going to take my time, enjoy painting all that 80s oak white, and get, you know, self-fulfillment from it.
Bonnie,
I'm
just going to interrupt you so we're making this very clear to people. You can add prayers. You can add additional things that you feel are helpful. But page 84 doesn't direct you to do that. Page 84 doesn't direct you to put anything in writing. And it doesn't direct you to do additional prayers. All it says is, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. So, Bonnie, do you want to do that out loud or to yourself?
Sure. I'll say the short version. So, basically, I'm going to ask God to remove the character defects that I'm showing here today.
No, all it says, Bonnie, and I'm going to really stick to the simple words because people really have trouble sticking to the simple words. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. All you're going to do, Bonnie, is ask God to remove them, either out loud or to yourself. Which do you prefer?
I'll say it to myself, Nancy.
Okay, you go ahead.
All right.
Yeah, say it to you, and then tell me when you are done.
I'm done, and I feel great. Thank you so
much. Okay, now, we're not done yet. Because it says we discuss them with someone immediately, and I think you and I have done that, and unless there's something else you want to tell me. And then it says, make amends quickly. Now, we have to consider this. Bonnie, do you feel you've harmed Lee? Do you feel?
I do. I've been hucking him. Hucking him.
That's Yiddish for
being a pain in the ass. Being
okay.
And then also, I'm hammering really loud so he'll hear me, and throwing stuff down in the attic so he'll hear. Okay, fine. I owe him an amends. I'll make an amends.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And it says here, quickly. Make the amends quickly. So it doesn't tell us if it means the second you're done or if it means 5 minutes later or 5 hours later. You know, there's parts of the 10th step where we have to use common sense or make a reasonable interpretation. So how you interpret quickly, each one could have a little different idea. How quickly do you think you can make those amends, Bonnie?
Well, so he's at work. Do I have to call him or should I wait till he comes home?
You know, I will leave that up to your own common sense. You know his schedule and your, but all we know is quickly. And then it says, and this is so interesting, the last sentence, we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And this is a very fascinating sentence because it's saying, Bonnie, really firmly and decisively and turn your thoughts away from Lee, away from all the home projects and the people at Home Depot and everything else. Turn your thoughts away. And now you're going to turn your thoughts to someone you can help. And that's so much, that is so much our program. And I've heard somebody who I respect very much in the program say, don't tell anybody else about this thing with your projects and Lee. You know, don't, because you keep obsessing about it. You've handed over to your higher power, and it's on God's shoulders now. And now you're going to just use your energy and your thoughts to help others. And I want to just... I want to just end this little section before we go into the Q&A in general. I just want to end with page 15 of the big book, which is Bill's story, his wonderful story. And he talks about, in the middle of page 15, about the idea of helping others, which is how the 10th step instructions end, where we're going to resolutely turn our thoughts to someone else we can help. Well, it's in Bill's story on page 15. He said, "I soon found when all other measures failed, work with another, and I'm going to say compulsive overeater, would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going." So that really comes to mind. That really comes to mind when, as we're talking about helping others and the wonderful power that it has.
There were newcomers last night at Scottsdale. I took down their number, so I'll call someone now. Thank you.
That's
so
wonderful.
Much. I feel so good.
That's good. And Bonnie, thank you so much. And we're now, Leah, at the end of our presentation, and we're ready to do the Q&A.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy and Bonnie, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with all of us, and for your inspiring and instructive presentation on Step 10. Thank you. So very helpful to all of us this morning. The share
Thank
ID
you.
For today's presentation, 21,744. That's 21744. Bonnie P. and Nancy J.'s contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so you'll need to stay tuned for that. And indeed, we will now transition to a question-answer segment. If you have...
Leah?
Nancy, I don't hear anything.
Leah?
If you have a question for Nancy or Bonnie, please press star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name. Questions only, please. Star 1 to unmute.
Good morning. This is Terry B.
Hello.
Terry C, am I hearing?
D as in David.
Terry B.
B. Maureen H.
Maureen H, yes, PB. Janice PM, I believe.
Yes.
Joanne B.
Joanne B.
Did you hear Henrietta?
Mary
L.
And Conayetta. And Mary
Thank
L.
You.
Okay, let me tell
Barbara
you what
W.
I have thus far. We'll get Barbara W. on the list. Okay, let me tell you who I hear at this point, and we can always ask for more. I've got Terry D., Maureen H., Pete B., Janice P.M., Joanne B., Hanayeta, Mary L., and Barbara W. Okay, everybody mute except for Terry D. Questions only, please. Go ahead, Terry.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Thank you for y'all's beautiful presentation. It was really helpful. And it you sound just like my sponsor. Keep it simple. Follow the page 84. So thank you. I am not as vigilant as I need to be. I've been in the program. I've been recovered for thank God, a few 24 hours. What do you recommend? You know, How do you go about actually picking up that phone? Just pick up the phone. What do you do when you find yourself a little resistant to make when you know it's important to do?
Yes. I'll give my thoughts, and then Bonnie can give her thoughts on how do you motivate yourself to pick up the phone. It's a great question. And there's a few things. One is there are a lot of Zoom meetings. So I'm going to just talk now about Zoom meetings because that's what I've been going to in recent years. And in the chat, people will put in the chat available for step 10s. Can you hear that, Terry? Terry?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, I hear you.
Good. So, Terry, you look in the chat on the Zoom meetings, and many people will say available for step 10s. Then there are all kinds of groups now, step 10 groups, where people take step 10s from each other. Also, you could put in the chat who would be available to take step 10s, and people will people are looking for kind of buddies. And some people call people who are willing to take their step 10 calls a God squad, and they'll start to kind of develop the God squad. Who is available to take your phone calls? It may depend on the time of day. I know somebody that has a God squad that includes people in Europe and Israel because of the time zones. You have to take that into consideration. So once you have a good God squad, you're going to be more likely to make these calls. And Bonnie, I'll pass it to you.
So I think the question was, how do you get motivated? Well,
yes.
I really hate the way I feel when I'm resentful. It's like poison. I have to get rid of it. I just can't stand it anymore. So I do it. And with people like Nancy, it's really quick. But for me, the key is I really have to see it and I have to believe it. Otherwise, it's not going anywhere. But, yeah, that's how I motivate myself. I just can't stand being in my own skin with it. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Terry D. Okay, Maureen H., your question, please.
Oh, hi, it's Maureen H. from South Carolina. I have difficulty sometimes understanding the dishonesty part, where I've been dishonest. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Yes. Using Bonnie's example of her husband who doesn't want to do home projects and you know, all the repairs and all the projects around the house. Her husband just doesn't want to do it, and she does it. Well, I don't know if you understood what she was saying, so I'm going to repeat it a little bit because it's such a great example of, you know, it's dishonest to say my husband doesn't love me, so he doesn't do the projects, or my husband doesn't care about the house because he doesn't do the projects, or he's lazy and he doesn't do the projects. You're putting facts in there, Maureen, that it could be true, but it could not be true. So you're telling yourself things that may or may not be true, getting yourself worked up. I've also heard it called catastrophizing, where you take something and make it really big and finally decide, my husband hates me. If he didn't hate me, he wouldn't let me suffer like this doing all the projects myself. So you're telling yourself things that may or may not be true. And in that sense, it's dishonest. Does that help at all? Maureen, to unmute, you go star 1.
Okay. Yes, Nancy, thank you very much.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways of being dishonest. Of course, there's the traditional lying, cheating, stealing, but most of the time that's not what we're talking about, really. And people say, I'm not dishonest, they mean they don't lie, cheat, or steal. But there's many ways to be dishonest. So, Bonnie, do you want to say something?
I do. So I think that dishonesty, selfishness, have a different meaning inside the context of the Big Book, completely different. It's just selfishness. It's like how I internalize things. It has nothing to do with whether or not I give to charity, because I do, and I do all those things. But dishonesty is actually really... Can you hear me? Dishonesty
yes.
is actually a really easy one for me because I automatically go there. I can tell myself an unbelievable story, and my fear is prompted from the dishonesty. Like, let's say I have a fear that the election won't turn out the way I want it to. I mean, the dishonesty is the world. If it doesn't, the world's going to come to an end. There's going to be another world war. You know, the dishonesty is just this huge story I'm always telling myself about, you know, a catastrophe of what's going to happen if I don't get my way. So that's how I identify it. Does
yes, and you
sense?
Know, yeah, very much. And Bonnie, I want to add, when you said you feel so much better after you do a 10th step, I think when we realize we're catastrophizing, that
yeah.
this may never happen, that
Correct.
Brings, don't you find that that is so helpful to know that
right.
that you're catastrophizing, this may never happen, and your whole blood pressure, everything calms down because you realize you've gotten yourself into a terrible state. Your emotions
Correct.
Are so high.
Correct. And actually, now I laugh. When I hear myself say the dishonesty, I honestly laugh as it's coming out of my mouth because it's so funny.
Yeah, Bonnie, thank
you. Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Maureen, for the question. Okay, moving on to Pete B with a question, please. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you for taking the meeting. It's great to hear you. Ladies, thank you so much for your presentation. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. So thank you for clarifying that this is your opinion of how the step 10 is practiced, and this is your practice. That's very, very
correct.
Listening, that everyone's entitled to their opinion and to practice it the way that it's practiced. So my question is, and it relates to the instructions or relates to the essay in step 10 in the AA 12 and 12, that tells us that we have to develop a habit of accurate self-appraisal. So how do you recommend that somebody develops a habit of accurate self-appraisal if they're regularly going to somebody else to help them process their basic human emotions?
Okay, Peter, I'll give my thoughts on that. If I understand you, and maybe you tell me if I'm not responding to what you asked. I think just the simple process, the way it's laid out on page 84, yes, another person is participating. That doesn't take away from the fact that you are answering these questions. It's you, as we talk about self-appraisal, you're the one who is saying how you're, and here I'm going to use my side roof, you're the one who's going to say how you're selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid. The other person's listening, and you may discuss it. It says you should discuss it. You talk about it with the other person, but you are the one who's attaching meaning to each of those things. So now I'm going to pass it to Bonnie.
Well, as I started to say, I ask God to open my heart and mind to see the truth. And that's where I get the relief.
as it says on the page number I listed, where it says we're ready to look at the angle. How I interpret that is asking God to open my heart and mind. When I see the truth, I can let it go like that. I mean, I see the truth. That's how I see the truth. That's how I do the self-appraisal.
Nancy asked me a question.
No, Pete, I want to thank you. Very, very excellent question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. Star one to unmute, please. Janice PM.
Hi, good morning, my Leah. This is Janice PM, and I'm a grateful recovered, compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. What a nice skit. It came to light, the simplicity of step 10. Now my question is, could you just give a little, both of you or one of you?
I didn't hear the question.
Janice, we need you to clarify
your
request.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, go ahead.
My goodness.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a recovered compulsive overeater living in Massachusetts. I just want to say the skit. Can you hear me now? The question.
We heard that. We need the what you're asking. Your question, please.
If you could tell us a simplicit amend letter or simplicity of an amend that you would give orally to somebody. Could you get that?
So you're asking for, if you're making an amend, how do you keep that simple? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah, if you're going to write a letter, what should it include?
Page 84.
Yep.
Says you must write
you.
Anything. Oh, Janice?
Yes.
Janice? That directs you to write anything. So if you choose to write, which of course you're always... It's your privilege and your own judgment when you want to write things, but it doesn't tell you that you must write. So that's an important recognition, because I think there's an advantage to keeping the 10th step very short and simple, even with the amends part. If you choose to write, it's going to make it perhaps a little more elaborate, and it will protract the process and take more time. And we don't want to do that as a goal, because what our goal is to do several 10 steps a day. Because as we go through the day, if we experience any of the four things that I mentioned in that sadhru, if you experience selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, or fear, you're going to do a 10th step. Well, if you make it really long, the process long, you're not going to be as likely to do them when you should be doing them, which is ideally several times a day. And as far as what words you use, Janice, what words you use for an amend, it's always, did you harm someone? And if you harm someone, you want to just in simple words say, I'm sorry. Maybe you were overly critical of someone, that's what you're making an amend for. I'm sorry I was overly critical of you. I should not have said this, or I should not have done this, whatever it is. I'm very sorry. I will try not to do it again. I won't do it again. I wouldn't put much more than that into it. Keep it simple. And so the person knows that you recognize you caused harm. And don't put anything in the amend as an excuse. I did it because I had a headache, or I did it because I was tired. Don't excuse yourself. Just say, I'm sorry I caused this harm, and indicate what the harm was, and that you're very sorry, you won't do it again. So, Bonnie, do you have anything to add?
I do. I think that...
step nine would require more of an amends type process. But for the step 10, I would just briefly say, because I don't want to draw too much attention to how loud I was hammering with Lee, but I would just say, you know, I love doing, I would say what I realize my truth is, which is I love doing these projects. It's not your responsibility. You do enough around here. So I apologize. And that's it. And he'll say, thank you. And that's it.
Excellent. Thank you, Janice PM, for your question. Appreciate that. Okay, moving on. Joanne B., please, your question.
Hi, everybody. This is Joanne B., calling from Vermont, recovered compulsive overeater. My question is, I'm a teacher, and I teach several different grades, and my day is just jam-packed, going from thing to thing to thing to thing, and there's no time, I feel like, for reflection. I get to the end of the day, and I'm just, you know, I'm tired, whatever, but what do you suggest for people who have a schedule like that, and how can I actually do 10 steps when my schedule just doesn't allow me to make a phone call or even a text message? And how do I, can I collect them all at the end of the day somehow and make one phone call? Anyway, if you have any suggestions for me, I'd be really appreciate it. And great presentation, by the way. Thanks.
Oh, good. Bonnie, I've been jumping in going first each time, and I have to make an amend to you for doing that. Why don't you go first this time?
No, it's okay. It gives me a second to think about what I want to say. So I would say that I always had time to eat. I always had time to go around and pick up all the things I like to eat. It's hard, but, you know, I would just maybe take a break for a second and pull away and do it if it's bothering you. And, you know, we all are busy. We all have busy lives. But if it's poison, it's got to be taken away. Doesn't have to take more than we dragged it out with explaining, but it literally could. I've done them in a minute. So that's all I have to say. What about you, Nancy?
Well, I have heard of people writing down, like you said, Joanne, writing down on a little card the things that upset them throughout the day and then calling somebody when they could do it. That's not the ideal thing. The ideal thing is to do it right away. And, you know, if you look at page 84, they use words like quickly and at once and you want to get the relief. Let's say another teacher insulted you, Joanne, and you're very upset about it. Another teacher just before the day began just really insulted you, and it was starting to weigh in your mind. And well, if you could get someone to watch your class for a moment, or if you go to the ladies' room, quickly make a call. However quickly you can do it, you know, each person's situation obviously varies. The ideal is to do it right away. But if you can't, write it down so you don't forget it. And like you say, at the end of the day, call somebody and go over them. At least you're doing something about it. How quickly you can do it is up to your particular life circumstance. So hope that helps.
True, Nancy. I agree with what you said.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Joanne B., for your question. Next up, Hanayeta R., your question, please.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you all three of you, so much. You know, we can't do this without you guys. What a great job on presentation. My question is, no, I can't remember. I think it was Bonnie. Are you Saad? Are you the Saad lady, Bonnie?
Nancy.
So it's for Nancy. Nancy, you were cut out when you were talking about how you did the Saad roof. I don't remember, or part of it I don't remember, where you were struggling that you had to make that reference to Saad roof and really
yes.
What it stands for. So I didn't get all of that.
Okay, well, maybe it cut out, or maybe, let me just tell you how it happened. I found that nobody, including me, could really remember all four things you're looking for. All four things. And they're, you know, they're not the most everyday words. So to really remember them is a little tricky. And I thought, okay, how am I going to remember this? And I thought, well, I'll take the first letter of each of these four words. And selfishness, so I took S. Dishonesty, I took D. Resentment, I took R. These are, you know, the first letter. And then fear, I took F. And I looked at it. I actually wrote it on a piece of paper, S-D-R-F. And I thought, gee, is there some famous celebrity that has all these letters in her name? Is there a state in the United States? I went over everything. And then I thought, well, maybe I can divide it into two words. And I thought S-D, and I thought of Saad. And then I looked at R-F, and I thought, roof, because I've seen those little houses. They have them in Ireland. They have them in some other countries where there's a house, and then the roof is kind of sod. It's like grass. It's a roof of dirt and grass and supported, I'm sure, by wood. And I thought, that's a good mental picture, and I'll remember those four things. And I even Googled sod roof, Hannah, and there are pictures. If you Google sod roof, you'll see there's a lot of charming pictures of cottages and homes with a sod roof. So it works for me. And I even sometimes when I speak to OA groups on this, I'll show, you know, if it's Zoom where you can show pictures, I'll show pictures of sod roofs. Because, again, it's to just help your memory retain it. Because if we don't know what we're looking for, it says continue to look. Well, you've got to know what you're looking for. So does that make sense to you, Hannah?
Yes, if I'm still not muted, then yes, that does. Thank you for redoing it. I will look up Saad roof after this meeting.
It's kind of fun. Google it and see what you find.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Connietta. Mary L., your turn.
Hi, this is Mary L. from Hilton Head, South Carolina. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Nancy and Bonnie. I think you've answered a lot of my questions. I've been floating around OA for a long time before I found Vision for You and been recovered for some time. But one issue, and you've answered a lot of it for me, thank you, is when I'm doing tenses or I'm asked to do a tenth step and I take it, like you mentioned, there's so many different groups, and it seems like sometimes if you don't follow the script and you don't have it written down, they don't want to take it. And that's just, you know, I didn't learn it that way from my sponsor. I learned it the way you're teaching it, which is quick. And sometimes I feel, and I loved the example of the skit and the fact that you sort of slowed Bonnie down when she just wanted to vent. And that's a problem that I have sometimes is, you know, and I'm getting better at it, but then I'm being told that, hey, if I don't do it their way, I'm going to relapse. But I'm not worried about that. That's their opinion. That's not what God says to me. You know, for me, I see one of the most miracles I heard too, and I know when I do a 10th step or I do a God Squad call or I do an outreach call for myself is help, thanks, and like Bonnie said, wow, the immediate relief. But But could you elaborate a little bit more on how to handle the you're not doing it the right way, or you know, some tactful way to say it? Which I don't think I'm pretty tactful, but sometimes I get ran over.
I would just have a God, like, well, people call it God squad, but I would say a group of people that I do it with, because it's just, you're going to deal with what you're dealing with if not. And now if people call me who I don't know who do it, I just listen, because it's they do it their way and they like it their way, so that's fine. But I have to do it a certain way. So if I call the people I know that do it that way, I'm in excellent, excellent shape. So I just wouldn't call, I guess, people I don't know. I would call the people I know do it the way I do it, if that's what you're asking.
And Mary, sometimes to just acknowledge if you do it a certain way and the person says, oh, I also add this prayer or that prayer, acknowledge, say, you know what, I know groups do it different ways, and this is the way that I do it, or the way my sponsor has asked me to do it, or I'm comfortable. I think just sometimes just talking it over with someone, then they understand that you know you're not doing it the way they're doing it, and that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with us, you know, just like the way we all pray differently, or we have different higher powers, or different food plans, or, you know, we're all looking for recovery, but in slightly different ways. So I would just say it.
Well, I love that.
All right.
To me, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What I hear you
Thank
guys
you
saying.
Thank you for your question.
I love being authentic. Thanks for the help. Thanks. And wow. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your question. Okay, in the interest of time, we'll try to squeeze in this last question with Barbara
Rivka
W.
Rivka R.
Barbara W., please. Star 1 to unmute Barbara W.
Hello, this is Barbara W.
Yes, go ahead
Hello.
With your questions, please. Oh. Questions only.
Okay, my question is, I have had a family member. I have had a longstanding actual fear of her. And whenever family, my question is, how do I get past my longstanding resentment of her amazing, what I call amazing ability to get along with people that I consider out of reach, you know, prominent people kind of thing. And yet she won't sit down and have a conversation with me. And I am just terrified of her. And I'd like to know how a 10-step, which I've done many times, is going to help me get past that fear.
Have you done a fourth and fifth with her about her?
Not a fourth and fifth, no.
That's what I would do, since you said it's longstanding. It's going to be a deeper dive.
And the other thing I'd like to add is you mentioned two things. One is your fear, which is one issue. The other issue is getting her to sit down with you. She doesn't want to do that. That's kind of looking at the results. And, you know, I've heard it said, we're not in the results business. So the goal, as far as our program of recovery, would be for you to address your own fears and your own feelings about it, your own resentment, your own fear, your own selfishness, your own dishonesty about this person. But as far as her behavior, her willingness to interact with you, to have a relationship with you, to sit down with you, that's something to let go of, because that's a result. So that's all I wanted to add about that.
Thank you, Barbara, for your question. Thanks to everyone.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Barbara W. And thank you to everyone who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you so much, Nancy J. and Bonnie P., for sharing your personal experience, your personal insights with us, and, of course, the thorough, rich, helpful presentation on Step 10. Certainly a gem for our archives. Thank you so much. The share ID morning, 21,000. Thank you, Bonnie and Nancy. Share ID for this morning, 21,744. We will now close our meeting this morning from page 164. It's from a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.